This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Y'all, welcome to Zone 7. Tonight is going to be a party, is all I can tell you. I got Joshua Schiffer and Franz Borghardt. Y'all ain't ready. If you're driving, you might need to pull over. I'm telling you, we have just had one of the best evenings I have ever had at Manuel's Tavern, the original Zone 7.
You don't remember many of those, I should just note. Like, the memory level at Manuel's is brief.
That's valid. That's valid.
Yeah. I quit drinking in 2008. Even I've got nights that I don't remember there.
Right.
Because that spot you could not have picked a better spot.
It was perfect for what we wanted. And Josh, when we first started talking about doing this, and we were like, yes, let's do it. There's no doubt. We've got to, you know, have our other friends. And y'all, we invited, you know, Jerrion Shepherd and Susan Hendricks and Joe Scott Morgan. And of course, Franz, he's with us tonight, like we said, and Nancy Grace. Y'all, the walls came off the place. I'm just telling you, people, they thought they were ready. They thought they knew what this event was going to be. But let me just give you all a brief little thing. We decided, instead of doing our normal thing where we take a case and kind of dissect it for you, we thought, let's do a real Zone 7. Let's do what we used to do at Manuel's Tavern. And let's all get in one room and, you know, have a meal together and share some stories and talk about our cases that are well-known or unknown and talk about our background. How did we get here? And Josh, they were not disappointed, were they?
It was awesome because, so from the, I've never done this before, don't know quite what to expect and have drugged Franz. And, you know, I brought my daughter and I'm like, all right, we're going to go do this. It was amazing because it was super organic because of just who was there. Like, you walk in and this was just an ideal venue because it's super friendly. It's this historic bar for people that don't know. This is one of those legendary Atlanta bars. It's actually, on the east side over towards Decatur. But it's been a legendary political cop, you know, protest bar for 50 years. And it's got this great room. And I walked in at 5:30 and it was just packed. Every single table was full. The whole room turns around and starts chattering and seeing this, and you're like, what is this? But it just started off with, hey, let's start talking, telling some stories. And the next thing you know, it was just story after story from people who just wanted to show up and share. And
absolutely,
that was a really cool experience for me. And I definitely, the feedback from the audience was just overwhelming.
Overwhelming. But y'all, in the most classic Zone 7 fashion, Josh and Franz are talking. I get in this little group chat and Franz is like, no, I'm coming. This will be great. I've already booked my ticket. And I'm like, no. If you're coming, oh, you're going to be front and center, sugar. There ain't no doubt. People are going to lose their mind. And he's like, no. I just want to come and support. I am background. I wasn't having that. No siree. If he was coming and he's already bought a ticket, y'all think he ain't going to get behind that microphone if I've got breath in my lungs? So let me tell you, he led off for us because poor Dave Mack from Body Bags, Dave was coming. Dave had a flat tire on I-20 trying to get here from Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Franz is like, hey, not a problem. He starts us off, Franz, would you please tell everybody how you just got to the microphone, not a note card, not an outline, and just commanded that room so beautifully?
Well, you're very sweet to say all those wonderfully kind things. And it is true that I bought the ticket not to be, you know, I like making things about me. I like it. Josh will tell you. Franzi loves Franzi.
He's good at it.
But I really did buy the ticket so that I could just come and visit and watch the show because, I, like anybody, I'm into this. Standing up in that room, though, I'll say this. It was like having a conversation with a bunch of friends about cases and things in the system that, and what I really liked was the fact that you had an intermingling of all sorts of law enforcement. You had former prosecutors, prosecutors, defense attorneys, you had crime scene folks, a detective. I felt in good company, right? You know, and I mainly, you know, the funniest was I was sitting there thinking about, okay, what are the cases I want to talk about? And I kind of alluded to, you know, at one point I represented a guy named C Murder, a rapper named C Murder, who was accused of murder. Ain't that a bitch? But the one I enjoy talking about, the one that I got to tell you guys, the one that kind of kickstarted my career was the serial killer case I was on in Baton Rouge. And you know, I geeked out on that case. That we had three killers, we had three serial killers, all three have been convicted in Baton Rouge. And I represented the third of the three, Jeffrey Guillory. And so I just told the story about what it was like to sit next to a serial killer for 2 weeks and try a case and to prep a case. And the funniest was my defense was that the victim in the case, God rest her soul, actually knew and hung out with another of the serial killers. She was an associate of Sean Gillis. Sean Gillis, in fact, referenced her when he was spilling his guts and confessing to his crimes. Now, of course, he didn't kill her. He didn't confess to killing her. But that certainly didn't stop me from pointing the finger. But, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, in good old-fashioned criminal forensic style, that was a DNA case.
And you know what's so crazy? I didn't even know you represented C Murder. And when you said that, I'm like, I can remember being on Nancy Grace saying, well, that's going to be a workaround right there. That's the first thing you got to get over with that jury.
The best part of that case was our case was he shot, it was all on video. He shot a gun at a nightclub. Now, it really wasn't a murder case, but he had a murder case in another parish. And it was all on video. He walks into the door. They metal detect him, and he doesn't want to empty his pockets because he has a gun on him. And essentially, it leads to a shooting. But that's not the best part. The best part was the club owner, the true victim of the crime, sued him and his label, claiming that it was a promotion to a record that he had coming out. So that the whole thing was really not real. It was
chase that money, man. Chase right, that money.
Right. So
people
our
do
defense
dumb things for money.
So our defense after that civil suit was filed, our defense became, yeah, this really wasn't an attempted murder. This was a promotional item. Okay, because what do you do? Guys, what do you do when your client's on video with a gun, firing a gun? You lean into what you got.
Yeah, no, you got to work with it. You got to work with it.
Ultimately, on that case, before everybody came to their senses and we started picking a jury, he ended up pleading. He ended up pleading to the club shooting because his bigger fish to fry was the murder case in the other parish. And ultimately, we got him a wonderful deal on and look, being called C Murder, he didn't do himself any favors, right? So it was, look, bigger picture, guys, bigger picture. Cheryl, it was so much fun getting to hang out. I mean, the highlight for me was little old me sitting there talking on the mic. Nancy Grace comes in at the beginning of my talk, and she, of course, now knows who I am, which how funny is that Nancy Grace knows who Franz Borchardt is? She made a comment about, oh, Borchardt's on the mic. I got that story for the rest of my life, guys. Thank you.
But you know, Josh, you and I were sitting there at one point and we're like, you know what? There are people in this room that came from Indiana and Ohio and Louisiana, not just Franz, but other people from Louisiana and Florida and of course, Georgia. Crazy. It was unbelievable. But you know, when you took the mic, let me tell you something.
Oh, stop.
But this is what I love. Not only do you start telling the stories, but you're so great at incorporating what you did at your trial college, that camp, that inclusive, here we all are. And again, giving homage to your mentor. And that, I think, set the tone for that room with you to say, wait a minute, they're telling us intimate stories. How did I get here? How do I frame a case? I'm going to tell you. And I loved that story.
I have a firm belief that not necessarily the technical parts of trial lawyering, But the personal parts of trial lawyering can be done by any single person given some time and attention. There is not an intelligence floor that you must be this smart to tell a good story, because stories are about feelings. And we have been conditioned by our culture, by our universe, to tamp down so much of our natural expressiveness, the expressiveness that would exist without the artificial constructs. We got to actually work at how do you let that storytelling out? And the best way to do that is to show it. And that's what I try to do with any talk is just think about, you know, this room, these people, what stories are they going to want to be engaged in and listen to? Because if you're paying attention to your listener, that's going to get you to tell a story that means something to them. It's you're approaching it from their perspective. And I just love when you're, like Franz said, in this incredible room of people that was warm and trustworthy, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and was there out of genuine interest and care. These were people that have the connections that I think are really special and that I want to know about. So I just like being with those kinds of people.
Well, and let me add this. Josh and I know each other because of the Jerry Spence Trial Lawyers College. I met Josh at one of their graduate programs in Wyoming. We had, in fact, had a dorm right next to each other. We smoked cigars with each other. And what few people know is it was such a wonderful experience. We got to bring cases up with us, and nobody knows. Josh knows because he was there. At one point, it was Jerry Spence working with us on cases that were tough and complex. And I raised my hand. I was a public defender, raised my hand and said, "Mr. Spence, how do you voir dire if your client is accused of being a serial killer?" And to his credit, he was like, "Well, that's a good question. Is your client a serial killer?" You know, and we voir dire. I had Jerry Spence working on a case. Josh is in the room, and small world.
And that's the special magic of some of those gatherings and the power of a group, because that universe, especially when Jerry was there and active in the college, it was the best group of lawyers the world could have met. The volunteer staff were people that, you know, literally former U.S. attorneys, some of the most famous military attorneys of all time, the legends of personal injury, the guys that literally get the gigantic front page news verdicts. And then for that 15, 20 years, you couldn't pick up the newspaper and see a big legal issue without being like, "I bet I know a trial lawyers college person that was associated with that in some way." And it's because Jerry teaches all about the storytelling and teaches that how are you going to tell your client's story if you can't tell your story? And the way that you find your story is by doing self-examination. And this is where a lot of people get kind of ickied out, because there's a lot of what can be graciously described as group therapy, where you use these psychological tools called psychodrama to act out and to put into motion different parts of lives, different storytellings. And those tools are being used therapeutically to tell the lawyer's stories. And I think that all lawyers, to a degree, are broken people. So we get the benefit of kind of doing therapy with each other. But at the same time, those tools of putting emotions and feelings into action, in reaching back through time and space, in painting visceral pictures of incidents, if you can teach lawyers to do that, it's going to make them more effective trial lawyers. And that's what we all became. And I can go down a list of a couple hundred of us that are some of the most prominent lawyers in the nation. And we all have that kind of special connection. And I remember vividly the young Franz public defender. There's a funny story about Franz in a tent, and there was a lack of space. So Franz was going to maybe be in this big old army tent. And we're like, "Franz, no, man, we'll get you a room in the dorm." And he goes, "No, I'm good in the tent." And we're like, no, France, man, this is the middle of nowhere, Wyoming. Like, this is east of the Continental Divide. You walk off the ranch, you gonna die. Like, yeah. It is next to the Native Reservation. Franz is like, no, I'm good in a tent. We're like, no, dude, come on, come into the barn, man. We got room. I don't know. Well, there was only one other person that was in the tent. And this was a large tent. This was a
military grade tent.
Like with rooms and stuff. And just so happened that the other person staying in the tent was one of the more beautiful and striking prominent lawyers that okay. had been attracted. And it was like, oh, never mind. Franz gets to see her all yep. day. And gotcha. Never mind.
We'll Franz is a wilderness man all of a sudden. Like, I got you.
I'm good in a tent.
Girl, let me say this. It's July in the middle of Wyoming. Teton Mountains are in the background. And it's snowing in July. And for the tent, they had set up a shower outside of the tent in a little box space. And I'm like taking it. And keep in mind, if it sounds a little ridiculous, they it's set up the be. Tent. Yeah, they set up the tent in part because they were letting indigent defenders come to this event and who couldn't afford, their offices couldn't afford the cost of the tuition there. So they would give out scholarships and, hey, if you're willing to sleep in a tent, we're going to knock off a little bit of your tuition costs. And I was like, to learn from Jerry Spence and some of the best attorneys in the country, I'll sleep outside. Done. And we're not doing it justice describing it, but I remember sitting around a bonfire at one point, Cheryl, in the middle of July. And I'm like, and you know, I'm from South Louisiana. And I'm like, what are these little white flaky things coming down? It was snowing in July.
My word.
It's so wild that there's literally someone hears about a bear and it's like, all right, guys, there's a bear. Everybody be quiet. It is wild. It is beyond wild. You can look it up. It's the Wind River area of Wyoming. There's actually a movie about it, like the Wind River Killer or something like that. But yeah, it's the most beautiful, striking, desolate landscape ever. And it's 50 to 75 lawyers taking care of each other, completely stripped of all the pretense, of all the shenanigans. We do our own dishes. We clean our own bathrooms. Like it was a real special way that we all learned these tools. And that's really what I like talking about, are those tools, because they can be applied throughout your life with storytelling. And that's what good lawyering is. It's why I think we like true crime. We like good stories. The drama of humanity is a universal touchstone that very clearly a lot of people that think like me and I get along with enjoy the true crime universe because of those stories. That's what drives us. And it's why this is so enjoyable for us.
Right now, my favorite story is Franz basically saying to you, Josh, you touch my luggage, I'll kill you.
Yeah.
I think that's the funniest thing I've ever heard. No, I'm good in the tent. Trust me. But you know, Zone 7 is that way. The original manuals was that for me. We had defense attorneys. We had probation officers and crime scene investigators and detectives. Everybody's at the same table, enjoying the stories, enjoying the conversation, and learning from each other. And when I hear, you know, the younger rookies and younger detectives today talking about, I would never be friends with a defense attorney. Baby, you're going to need one. You're going to need one day, somehow, either you or somebody you love. And two, why in the world does it have to be that? It's not us against them. We're on the same team, really, because the way I look at Josh is going to keep me honest. He's going to keep me doing my job the best that I can.
Let me say this, and Josh, you may have experienced something similar. Some of my best client referrals have been from law enforcement or prosecutors who found out that they had someone in their lives that needed help. And look, I ain't going to get religious. You know, I'm not religious, Josh, But I will say it happened this week. I had one of my law enforcement buddies who's retired reach out to me because his son may have cancer. And he was like, would you say a prayer for my son? And I'm like, you damn right I will. Done. So it doesn't have to be in the courtroom. It's war. Outside of the courtroom, it doesn't have to be. And it shouldn't be. And candidly, if we're all doing our jobs right, I mean, I want to be able to go up to a forensic scientist and say, hey, let's talk about this, you know, and for them and I to be able to have an intellectually honest conversation about like something that is just something that we both find to be fascinated and interesting, and especially on cases we're not really working, those are the best conversations.
That's right. That's right. And that's when the real work can get done. Let's all get in a room, tell the truth, figure out the best course of action. Everybody don't need to go to jail.
And the learning, like that, if you want to increase the quality of your work product, whatever that is, as an officer, as an investigator, as a lawyer, you being exposed to other good practitioners is where you just get it. You can read it in a book. It is nothing like the experience of being there. And that also gets to the magic of the moment, going back to what Cheryl was talking about a few minutes ago with the original gatherings at Manny's. You can never create that magical moment again. That's something that I learned through trial lawyers college was we try to haunt these memories and recreate. And it took getting to the piece that, nope, that magic was that moment. And that serendipity and bit of creation, not to get too religious, to that moment of creation is truly unique and it will never be that way again. And that is a good, positive memory, and it can serve as an inspiration for future gatherings. But rather than go recreate, let's just go back and honor and care about those times that we had. And that helps us process and remember the most important parts from it. Because when we've gotten to the idea of that's done, that's wrapped up, that was a discrete moment, we can fully process it, get the lessons from it, and then apply in the future, trying to get back to those parts that make us feel so special, that really bring us together. Because that moment when you all are just connected and doing the right stuff, doing the work, getting forward, man, you feel it. It's special.
And, you know, you couldn't deny what was happening in that room, because for me, several things were just, it transcended anything we thought was going to happen. But watching Franz with Jackie Howard, I loved that. They were laughing. They were talking about Nancy, I'm sure. They were just cute as they could be. But to be together in that room in that moment was so special.
It was awesome. It was real. And it was such an honor to be invited.
It was such a gift.
It was so, like, I have my little cute, the pin backs actually arrived tomorrow. A young fan made me the most adorable little clay set of glasses that I'm making a pin out of and crocheted this incredible little glasses holder that sits next to my bed. The nicest people and just seeing everybody. And like, I don't get to see Susan Hendricks all the time. Like, I bump into her every once in a while, but like,
that's what I was getting to. Yeah. The second thing I enjoyed was the two of y'all. Oh my gosh. She is one of the most generous, kind, fun. But the two of y'all, I just enjoyed that dynamic, just watching. Okay, all of these people that I love and I respect and I'm friends with, we're all in the same room and something really good is fixing to happen.
The funniest piece for me was I was talking to Miss Jackie and she's like, are you going to Crime Con? And I looked at her and I said, Miss Jackie, I don't really consider myself a true crime guy. And she looked at me like I had horns on my head. And I said, I just don't see myself that way. And she was like, are you full of shit or something? Like, you know, and it was really funny because she's like pulling up true crime, the Crime Con advertisement on her phone. It's like, you going to this, Franz, right? And I was like, yes, Miss Jackie. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a crime con like no other this
like
year.
Like no other.
See, people don't understand. Franz, and until recently me, had a full day job. Like, Franz is going to get up and go to work tomorrow and do, like, the whole full day lawyer thing all day. And then when he gets a break in the action, Court TV's kind of always asking him, hey, can you jump on this hour? Can you jump on this hour? Every one of the hosts adores Franz. Then you got Nancy, you got everything else. That's all literally like the Franz hobby. Because he and I kind of share that same mentality. It's so fun to see how huge that true crime universe is, because it's not something, and I think I speak for Franz, that we ever were like, hey, let's go do this true crime. No, it totally dropped in the lap because of genuine enjoyment and genuine, man, we both really like this stuff.
But when y'all walked in that room and got the attention that y'all did from all of those people, you had to be uber aware that, hey, wait a minute, they know who we are. Like last year, you couldn't make it to CrimeCon because you had a major trial, but you sent gifts for everybody. You called me and said, hey, there's a box for you. I sent it to the hotel. Get it. You'll know what to do with it when you open it. I opened this gigantic box, y'all. It's his glasses, the round red ones, the green ones, the blue ones, the yellow ones. So I go to the session that I've got with Barbara Butcher. There's 500 people in that room, all wearing his glasses.
It was so cool.
But they were so touched that you would think of them even in your absence. And what did you get? You got a pin of your glasses because her mama brought those glasses home.
And one very nice woman literally brought those glasses from CrimeCon. I'm just a Josh. I'm hanging around. I'm a single dad with a great 14-year-old. I know people think I lead some sort of crazy. Nope, I'm a regular man. I drove a truck. The love and care, those feel so awesome. Like it really is moving. And I lap it up. I love that kind of care. I'll be greedy about it. I they're the nicest people.
When I say how, you know, generous Susan Hendricks is, I'm not kidding. She brought books for everybody, charged no one.
And people don't get exactly how brave the career pivot that she did. Like, she totally could have gone and done some fluffy stuff, and she is a deeply accomplished broadcaster. She's got a built-in audience. Someone will pay her a very reasonable living to be on the air somewhere. She didn't do that. And she didn't do, oh, here's true crime. I'm going to go do this. No, she picked a case that really meant something. And I don't believe anybody could go deeper than she has. And I think she's going to be the expert on something that I still believe there's chapters and chapters of the Delphi story waiting to get told. It remains an important part of discussion in the general crime and justice universe because of what we all saw happen in a trial that, I don't know, anybody that should be happy with what we saw.
Agreed. And Franz, you know, another thing that I thought was so great, everybody in that room knew you as a famous defense attorney, but you were once a prosecutor. And of course, Josh, famous defense attorney. But something super cool happened that night. And, you know, when I introduced Jerrion Shepherd, Detective Shepherd, I didn't know what story he might tell. I didn't know what case or background. And he started talking about Melissa Wolfenberger. And for y'all that don't know, I have a book coming out in May. And this is the case that Jerrion and I worked together. And, you know, we got kicked in the teeth. That's all I can tell you. And it was not what we wanted it to be. But when I tell y'all, Susan and Josh and Joe Scott Morgan and Nancy Grace, every single person helped in some way on this case, everyone. And so he got up and he started to talk. And I don't think he really knew what was going to happen in that room. He didn't know any of the other people. He certainly didn't know any of the guests or fans or people that wanted to participate. He didn't. And Franz, all of a sudden, you and Josh made him feel welcome and relaxed. Joe Scott and Susan made him feel great, right? And then Franz, when everybody started clapping and several people stood to their feet, he literally took about four steps back from that microphone.
That man, let me tell you, we have a lot of personality in the true crime world. It's the nature of lawyers, right? And so what was refreshing for me was, here's a guy that stands up and couldn't be more Clark Kent, but Superman in the same clothes, and very humble, very modest, very soft smoking. And to me, he was one of the most interesting, you know. Yes, it was awesome listening to Nancy Grace tell stories and answer questions. But to me, yeah. To me, the Clark Kent Superman of that event was that detective.
Yeah. My daughter actually commented that his stories, because she's seen some, she was really enthralled and thought that he was the best speaker of everybody. Cause he was so authentic and real, and just you never get to hear it like that from someone like him.
It was one of those moments, like you said, Josh, I mean, lightning might not strike twice, but it got pretty freaking close.
Yeah. No, that was a special, unique, that was an event. It was really, everything hit so well.
And Joe Scott Morgan, I mean, he about took the walls down. I've known that man over 30 years. Never heard that story. And y'all, I ain't going to tell it. I'm going to make y'all come to something and make him tell it again. It was that good. I told him, I said, how have I never heard this story? And he just grinned. He went, you don't know everything about me. I'm like, well, clearly.
Let me say this. The best looking and sounded man in that room may have been him. And look, again, I have a heightened sense of self-worth, as Josh will tell you. But I mean, if I'm listening to this, if I'm listening to this episode, this recording, I'm wondering, how can I attend one of these? Where can I attend one of these? And I know you're unleashing the gates, and this is going to be something that people can go to. But this is really just, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
And here's the great thing, to watch somebody like Nancy Grace, because again, when she walks in that room, you could have robbed the bartender and nobody would have seen you do a thing. And so she gets to the microphone, and she did something I thought that was so genius. She's like, y'all know all my stories. I'm going to take all your questions as long as you have questions. Y'all, she must have taken 100 questions.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not kidding.
She stayed. Like, she was awesome.
Stayed.
And it was like you're on the show, man. It was real Nancy. There was no, you know, gentle hand. No, it was the real Nancy.
It was the real Nancy, and it was the real Nancy on fire, because she's great behind a microphone, but when she's got a live audience that she can make laugh or gasp or mad, woo!
Oh, she was having a fun time. For someone who's a professional talker, getting that small format, intimate audience, you know, we're talking like a couple hundred people. Like, that room was eating everything out of her hands, and just folks love it. She's got that personality. Come on. She's who she is for a reason. She walks in and it got popping. Like, people were really, really excited.
That's the number one question I get asked. The few times I've been blessed to be on her show playing token defense attorney, which is a lot of fun.
The number one question. Fight with me, Franz.
Dude, it took me 2 or 3 episodes to realize that's what she wanted. And I got my cookie at the end of doing it. So, but people ask me, what is she really like? And I look at him, I'm like, what you see is what you get. It is not an act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the real Nancy. And she brings it, and she's unapologetic about it. And she happens, one of her dear friends happens to be a legendary long-term lawyer here that I'm also friends with. And so we got to see Renee as well, who is, man, talk about a memoir I want to read.
Yeah, Lord. Do you know how many people have to die before that can happen,
though? Oh, my God. Renee has, unless you know her, it's impossible to describe. She may be the most just singular lawyer I've ever practiced in the orbit of, because she's a universe to herself. Like, and the way she walks around, man, ain't nobody does better than Renee. Like, Renee's the kind of lawyer that can correct the judge in the middle of the case. It's, she's something special.
And like I told y'all, sometime you're going to need one. Well, one time I needed her. So I'm just telling you, you know, you need those friends. You need all those kind of people. I want to end, and I just want to hear from both of you. Just, you can just sum up what that night was for you. And y'all, we are headed to North Carolina on February 28th. I'll be posting stuff about it on our social medias. We've got Florida already planned. We've got Pennsylvania planned. We got Ohio planned. So we're coming. We've just got to make sure everything is locked and signed before we put stuff out. But North Carolina set for February 28th. And I'll be posting about it. But I want to hear from the two of y'all. Just kind of, here's the reason you would want to come to a 10-8. 10-8, the reason we're calling the tour the 10-8 tour is 10-8 is a police code that means I'm done with my last call. I'm ready for the next call. In other words, I'm open. I'm ready. I'm available. What's next? Give me something. And that, to me, just kind of set the tone for what this is. When Josh and I talk, we may talk about LISC one night. Then we're going to talk about what happened in this shooting. And we're going to have about the missing person over here. We're going to talk about the serial killer over here. Same with Franz. What's next? What's next? What can we do? Who else can we help? So that's the reason we called it the 10-8 tour. So Franz, I'll start with you. Just sum it up for me.
So for me, what it was kind of like the acoustical version of all the true crime put together. It's the unplugged, up close and personal, talking to people. And honestly, the first time I ever did anything with Cheryl, Josh, was you were there and we were talking about Karen Reed. And we had diametrically different views on Karen Reed, but it was that kind of conversational piece and where you could reach out and touch the people in the audience and they could do that to you. And then what was really nice was we took breaks and people would come up and start talking to us and we'd answer questions or we'd answer questions on the mic. So to me, it's like, if you're looking for that unplugged true crime experience, that is what this event was and is, and as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And I'll echo a lot of that, but I'll add, I'm at this kind of interesting juncture in my life where there's a lot going on. I'm slowing down my actual personal practice to concentrate on some other law adjacent things, including some philanthropy, including some political stuff, like becoming an advocate for domestic violence, because I think we need some domestic violence reform. And it was just a particularly poignant night for me to go and be welcomed so much by Cheryl, by the whole Zone 7 community, as it was kind of an arrival of sorts. That was, it's a night I will forever remember. Franz is one of my dear friends. I love the opportunity. We got to spend a few days together. He got to stay at the house, got to hang out with my daughter. The penultimate event was hanging out with all these great people, including my daughter, and getting to really revel in, man, Josh, this is a great place for you that you're really happy at. And you can derive enormous personal satisfaction and care, and you can care back because these are people that care about the same stuff that you do. And I really like that. And it was a wonderful evening. I look forward to the next ones.
I love you both. I admire you both. And, you know, again, folks, both of these men have given me fabulous advice. I mean, Franz has said, hey, when that book comes out, Swans Don't Swim in the Sewer, you need to, you know, talk it. You need to do an audio book. That's so sweet. Josh is the first one that told me, don't ever say the following. And I went, ooh, I think that's all over that book. So I had to take some things out. But, you know, good advice. People that cheer for you. Y'all, I preach this all the time about Zone 7. If you are hanging out with people that do not have the best for you in mind, are working against you, are talking trash behind your back, get rid of them. There are good people out there. There are. You're listening to two of them right now.
Thank you, Cheryl.
And y'all, I'm going to end Zone 7 the way that I always do with a quote. True friendship is when two friends walk in opposite directions, but yet are side by side. I'm Cheryl McCollum, and this is Zone 7.